Abdullah Mongolia. And practically speaking, every meaning in Mahabharata in Latin was dark. The military formulation was primarily by the Arjuna. But because Dhrishtadyumna had been ordained to kill Dronacharya, and Dronacharya was one of the formidable obstacles over there, so he was made the commander.
So, on the Kaurava side, the commander is Bhishma. But Duryodhana does not go to Bhishma. He is going to Dronacharya. Because he suspects about the commitments of both these personalities. He is doubtful about the commitment of Dronacharya and Bhishma. So, what he does is, he goes to Dronacharya because Dronacharya is a Brahmana and he is Acharya. So, you go to the teacher to consult. And while going there, he will also talk about Bhishma. And that way he will try to balance both of them. And especially, he sees that the military has been arranged very nicely and he wants to incite Dronacharya for that. And that's why he chooses Dronacharya and not Bhishma. So, what are the words that he speaks? So, now interestingly here, Raja Vachanam Abravit. So, there is no Duryodhana Uvacha in the Bhagavad Gita. So, he is just speaking those words.
Pashyaitan Panduputranam Acharyam Mahatim Chamum Yudham Drupada Putrena Tavashishena Dhimata.
O my teacher, behold the great army of sons of Pandu, so expertly arranged by your intelligent disciples, the son of Drupada.
So, sarcasm. Sometimes, when we want to incite a person into action, then somebody is very lazy. But we are doing this work so fast. The Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would also do that. Oh, you have cleaned so nicely. That person would become embarrassed. So he is saying, Tava Shishena is your disciple who is working against you now. The enemy which you have to fight has been arranged by your disciple. So implication is that, you as a Brahmana, you think you will be impartial, but that impartiality got you into trouble. So don't be impartial now. You are on my side, fight wholeheartedly for my sake. And especially we know he has enmity with Drupada. So therefore he is not just using Drishtadyumna. He says the word Drupada Putrena. And then he starts doing an assessment. He'll first assess, as is described over there, first he'll assess the forces on the Pandava side and then on his own side.
Atra Shura Maheshvasha Bhima Arjuna Samajuti Yudhana Viratascha Drupadascha Maharatha.
Yeah. So again he brings the word Drupada just to incite Dhrupada, and then he says, compares all of them to Bhima and Arjuna. So for him he is afraid of Bhima and he knows Arjuna is the most formidable warrior, so he compares others with these two people. And who are the people who come? Yudhana is Satyaki. Satyaki is a student of Arjuna. He's one of the Yadus. So the Yadu army fights. The whole Sena goes to the Kaurava side, Krishna comes to the Pandava side. But the individuals, Satyaki comes with Krishna, and Kritavarman is the friend of the Kauravas, so he goes to the Kauravas. He's not exactly a friend of the Kauravas, but because the army is going there, he has to go there. So apart from these two personalities, none of the Yadus are fighting. Yadu leaders are not fighting in the war. Satyaki or Yudhana is on this side, Kritavarman is on that side. And when they start fighting, now he say, because for him the greatest injuries are Bhima and Arjuna, he compares everyone with them. Now he does not focus on Arjuna because he knows his goal is to incite Dronacharya to fight, and Dronacharya already has too much affection towards Arjuna. So he doesn't harp on Arjuna, but he compares others with Arjuna. And then he goes forward and he says,
Drishtaketushche kitanaha Kashirajascha Viryavan Shaityascha Narapungava.
There are also great powerful fighters like Drishtaketu, Chekidana, Kashiraj, Purujit, Kunti Bhojas and Shaityascha.
So it's interesting, if you see the Krishna book, Krishna has been killing demons right from his childhood. There are so many demons coming and Krishna kills Kamsa. And now at this time Krishna has come from Mathura to Dwarka, he's Dwarkadhish. And after killing so many demons also, still there are so many Narapungas, there are so many kings who are ready to be on Duryodhana's side. And that's why Duryodhana's army is bigger than whose army? The Pandava's army. So Jarasandha has been killed and Shishupal, Dantavakra, all of them have been killed. But in spite of that, even in the time of Krishna, so there are so many demoniac kings were there. So the nature of this world, because Kali Yuga was about to start, the adharma was very, very high. So he will give a few names on his side, on the opposite side, then he will come to his own side. So now, after describing their names, he will say, yeah, that's next word. Yudhamanyushcha vikranta uttamaujashcha viryavan puru
nopadeyasha
sarva eva maharatha.
They are the mighty Yudha, the very powerful Ikkuma, the son of Subhadra, the son of Drupada. All these warriors are great
characters. So, Maharatha refers to one who can, one charioteer who can fight at one time with 100,000 charioteers. Ardharatha is one who can fight with 60,000 chariot warriors. Ratha is one who can fight with one chariot warrior. And Ardharatha is one who cannot fight with even one chariot warrior. So, at the start of the battle, Bhishma, when he is told to assess the two parties, he calls Karna as a Ardharatha. And Karna is incensed. Now, everybody knows it's not true, but Bhishma sees that Karna is very arrogant. Just to cut down his arrogance, he says that. Karna gets so angry, he says, I will not fight. I will not fight as long as Bhishma is here, because if I fight and win the war, Bhishma will get the credit. So then, now it's interesting, now after this verse, he will bring Karna. Although Karna is not there on the battlefield, and he is assessing the armies, but Karna is very much in the mind of Duryodhana. Because he knows, he is not sure about how much committed Bhishma and Drona are. But he knows Karna is 100% committed. So although Karna is not there on the battlefield, Karna is there in his mind. And he's comparing now. So after describing the other warriors, he comes to his own side now. So now he wants to encourage Dronacharya by saying, first he wants to incite him by saying, see, all those warriors are there. But don't think anybody is left on my side also. So he starts describing his warriors now. Asmakam tu vishishtaye tannibodha dvijottama
But for your information, or best of the Brahmanas, let me tell you about the captain who are especially qualified to lead my initiative.
Vijaya Uttama, he is referring to Acharya as the best of the Brahmanas. For the simple reason.
So,
because he again wants to encourage him. Sangyartama. Sangya refers to, as we know, noun. Sanya refers to that which, so every battle, every warrior has a particular symbol, a particular code by which he can be identified. So, Sanya Artham, I am going to give the information of the different warriors now. And then he starts speaking. Now he has a crisis. Because he is thinking, Bhishma is the senior most and Bhishma is the commander. So, whose name should I start first with? If I write in front of Dronacharya and if I mention Bhishma first, Drona might feel offended. But if I don't speak Bhishma first, will Bhishma be offended? He thinks, no. Dronacharya is a Brahmana. So therefore, he will not be offended. So then he speaks Drona first, and then he speaks Bhishma. Bhavan Bhishmascha Karnascha Vajascha Samitim Jaya Ashwatthama Vikarmascha Madhattisthasayvacha. So, as I said, because Karna is already in his mind, so first he thinks about these two. And as soon as these two are all, he thinks of Karna. But actually there is another much more senior person there, that is Kripa. So therefore, now he has to make up. So he gives an adjective to describe Kripa. Krupascha Samitim Jayaha. He is always victorious. In this way, he tries to balance out. Krupascha Samitim Jayaha. And further he goes on and says, Ashwatthama Vikarnascha. Now as you know, Ashwatthama, he's trying to please Dronacharya, so he talks about two relatives of his, Kripa and Ashwatthama. Now Vikarna is not a very dedicated, not a very formidable warrior. But he's afraid. Why is he afraid? Because Vikarna was the only one of the 100 Kaurava brothers who objected when Draupadi was being disrobed. And Draupadi challenged the assembly, nobody spoke, but Vikarna spoke, he said this is unjust. And then Karna shot him down, and then he was afraid that he might defect over. So according to the codes of war, during the battle, nobody can defect after the battle has started. But before the battle starts, one party can go to the other side. So just after this gets over, the Bhagavata gets over, Yudhishthira will make an announcement. So So all of you know that the cause for which I am fighting is righteous. If any of you want to give up and come to the cause of righteousness, I welcome you with open arms. At that time, Yudhisthira emerges from there. Yudhisthira is the son of Dhritarashtra through a maid servant. So he's a half brother of the Kauravas. He's not mentioned over here. But that defection happens. Actually, it's Yudhisthira who does the funeral rites for the Kauravas, because their whole generation is killed. Practically speaking, all the 100 sons are killed and their sons are also killed in the battle. Yudhisthira alone remains. So because he's afraid that Vikarna might defect, so although Vikarna is not in that caliber, he mentions Vikarna. Saumadatti. Saumadatti is Bhurishrava, son of Saumadatta. He's also a very formidable warrior. He was killed by Arjuna. First he was wounded by Arjuna and killed by Satyaki on the 13th day. Then they killed Jayadratha. So now he speaks, there are many others also. So then he goes, generalizes. Anye cha bahava shura madarthe tyakta jivita mana shatra karana sarve yuddha visharadaha. So Nana Shastra Praharana, they are equipped or expert, and Visharadaha, they are expert in fighting. So actually, sometimes Saraswati speaks through the demons to pronounce the truth. So what is he saying? Actually, grammatically speaking, what he says, Tyakta Jivitaha. So Tyakta is the past tense in grammar. They have given up their life for my sake. Actually, what he wants to say is, they are ready to give their life for my sake. They are so dedicated to me. So he's trying to say, you should also be dedicated like them. But Saraswati manages his tongue and makes his speech, the Jivita, they have given up their life for me. And Vishwanath Chakra Thakur says that Krishna will, in the 11th chapter, 33rd verse, when he gives the Vishwarupa Darshan, he says, Tasmat Matishta Shavalavasva Jitva Shatran Bhungsha Rajan Sarvas Mayai Vaite Nihataha Purvameva. All of them are killed by me already only. So he correlates this. So because they are already killed, so Krishna speaks that later, but now Saraswati speaks this to him. Mat arthe takta jivitaha. They are ready to give up their life, but he speaks indirectly, they have given up their life for me. And then, after doing this comparison, he gives a summary of their two forces. This verse gives a very interesting insight of something which we will encounter repeatedly in our study of Gita, an apparent contradiction between the acharyas. We'll come to that. Aparyaptam tadasmakam balam bhishmabhirakshitam paryaptam tvaidametesham balam bhimabhirakshitam. Translation? Yes. So, now the word paryapta and aparyapta. So the word paryapta can mean two things. One is limited and unlimited. Or one can be sufficient and insufficient. So when the prefix a comes in Sanskrit, it can magnify or it can oppose. Both ways it can happen. So now Baldevid Prabhupada follows mostly Baldevidya Bhushan. Prabhupada dedicates his commentary also to Baldevidya Bhushan, the Gita Bhushan commentary. So Prabhupada translates this as, our strength is immeasurable, it's unlimited. Whereas their strength is measurable. Now Chakravarti Pad is exactly opposite. He says our strength is insufficient and their strength is sufficient. So now, why is there this apparent difference? Actually, Baldevidya Bhushan is a Tattva Acharya. And Vishwanath Chakra Thakur is a Rasik Acharya. So, little background in our Sampradaya. before Srila Prabhupada, three main Acharyas are commented in the Bhagavad Gita. Bhagavad Gita is quoted extensively by Jiva Goswami in Sandarbhas. And it is also talked about occasionally by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in his discussions, although Chaitanya Mahaprabhu focuses more on Bhagavatam. So the first Acharya to write a complete commentary on the Bhagavad Gita is Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. So he wrote his commentary called Sarartha Darshini. Then after that, Baldevidya Bhushan wrote the Gita Bhushan. So Vishwanath Chakravarti wrote two commentaries, Sarartha Varshini and Sarartha Darshini. Sarartha Varshini is his Bhagavad Gita commentary. Sarartha Darshini is his Bhagavatam commentary. Now, after him, Bhaktivinoda Thakur wrote two commentaries. Although he did not comment on all the verses, either at the beginning or at the end. Say, one is Gita Ranjan and the second is a Sikh Ranjan. And Bhakti Sanat Thakur personally did not comment on the Bhagavad Gita, but Srila Prabhupada commented and he dedicated the Bhagavad Gita to Gita, to Baldev Vidya Bhushan. Now if we see, Prabhupada did not comment on Brahma Samhita because he said that my spiritual master has already commented and it will be Maryada Adhikramana. But we see Baldev Vidya Bhushan is like the rare disciple of Vishwanath Thakur, and still Baldev Vidya Bhushan also comments on the Gita. And if you look at it, the two Gitas, they appear to be quite different. Yes, he occasionally refers, but not very frequently does he refer to Vishwanath Chakravarti's commentary in his commentary, Baldev Vidya Bhushan. So because, according to time, place, circumstance. So we know historically that Baldev Vidya Bhushan had to defend the Gaudiya Sampradaya when it was challenged in which place? Jaipur. Jaipur, yes. When those deities were, Radharani was separated from Krishna from the altar because of the effect of the Ramanandis. So now in the traditional Vedic scholarly circles, for every sampradaya to be established as authoritative, that sampradaya's teachers should write commentaries on three books. These are called the prasthana traya. Prasthana is like the pillar or the foundation. So traya is three. So the prasthana traya is Shruti, basically Vedanta Sutra, Bhagavad Gita and Upanishads. So, Vedanta Sutra, Bhagavad Gita and Upanishad. So in our sampradaya, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, the natural commentary in the Vedanta Sutra is Srimad Bhagavatam. There is no need to write any other commentary. But by the time, so that's why none of our acharyas wrote the commentary before Baldev Vidya Bhushan. But when this was... when this argument was presented by Baldev Vidya Bhushan to the Ramanandis, Ramanandis, this is just your excuse. You don't have any commentary, that's why you're saying like this. He said, no, we can write a commentary. So then, because he had to establish the Gaudiya Sampradaya as authoritative, so he wrote commentaries on Vedanta Sutra, which is Govinda Bhashya. He wrote a commentary on the Bhagavad Gita also, Gita Bhushan. And he wrote a commentary on the ten principal Upanishads also. So that way, because he had to establish a Siddhanta, so he wrote his commentary. Now, Baldev Vidya Bhushan is focusing more on tattva, philosophical truth. And Vishwanath Chakravarti also talks about tattva, but he focuses more on rasa. So, from the tattva point of view, from the factual point of view, Bhishma is much more powerful. He's far more experienced, he is far more expert, and he has so much counsel, he has so much, you know, he has actually been trained by Parshuram. So Bhishma, from the military valor point, military skill and military valor point of view, Bhishma is more powerful. That's why, guarded by Bhishma, Duryodhana is saying, our strength is immeasurable. That's what Baldev Vidya Bhushan says. Now what Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says is, that yes, actually, one's fighting performance will be determined, not just by one's fighting skills, but by one's fighting spirit. And as far as the fighting spirit is concerned, Bhishma's heart is not there in the war. Because Bhishma loves the Pandavas. And had it not been for the strange quirk of faith by which he took a vow that I will always serve the ruling king of the Kuruvans, he would not be there on the Kaurava side. But he has to be there. So, because he loves the Pandavas, he knows their cause is just, so his heart is not there so much in the war. And that's why in the Mahabharata repeatedly, Duryodhana comes and tries to incite Bhishma to fight. On the other hand, what about Bhishma? His heart was there in the war from 14 years. You know, he has been wanting for the war to start. And because his heart is fully there in the war, that's why Vishnu Chakravarti said that their strength is greater. So their aparyapta would mean that immeasurable. So is this point clear? Mm-hmm. So, from the point of view, what Baldev Vidya Bhushan says and what Srila Prabhupada follows is that Bhishma's side is greater. Because Bhishma is more experienced. From the rasa point of view, because Bhima has more fighting spirit, so he is greater. So that's why sometimes there may be something apparent contradiction in the acharyas. But the acharyas have one purpose. Just like there's a difference of opinion between, say Bhima and Yudhishthira and Bhima. What to do with Dashrathama? What to do with Dashrathama? But both of them have the purpose of serving Krishna. But there's a difference of opinion between Bhima and Duryodhana of what to do. One is demoniac and other is a devotee. So there's a difference. So like that, different acharyas may give different interpretations in certain verses, but they are all common the purpose of glorifying Krishna. But when the Mayavadi gives a commentary, actually they are completely minimizing Krishna. Therefore their purpose is very different. And now, after glorifying Bhishma, now he thinks that, oh, Bhishma, you know, certainly he is the senior most warrior, but because we don't know how committed he will be, he says that yes, we have to make sure that others also protect him. So if we take that Bhima's commitment is lacking, then it means others have to make sure that if Bhima doesn't fight wholeheartedly, you should fight. Or if we say that Bhishma is our most important warrior, then we have to make sure that the enemy doesn't attack and kill him, because then our whole plan will be devastated. So all of you should protect him. That's what the next verse comes. Ayaneshu cha sarveshu yatha bhagam avastitah bhishma meva abhirakshantu bhavantar sarva evahi. Yes. Now, when Bhishma is addressed in two verses, Bhishma gets tired. What is all this politicking going on? It's enough now. Let's start the battle. So, he starts blowing his conch. Tasya sanjanayan harsham guru vriddha pitamaha nirmanadam minavyauchay shankham dadmo prutapavan. Simmanadam vinadyochai. So, this roar. So, the conch shell for the warriors, just like certain businessmen sport their own cars, certain cricketers have their own bats. So, all warriors have their own weapons, but the start of the war is inaugurated by the conch. So, everybody has their own conch. So, Bhishma, on one side, is fed up with Duryodhana. On the other side, he also, you know, he's my grandson, so I have to encourage him. Oh, he blows his conch shell. He feels, yes. Now I invoke the fighting spirit in Duryodhana and the fight is about to start. And then it is described how everybody else also starts blowing their conch shell. Saha shankhascha dheryascha manavanaka gomukaha sa deva abhyanyanta sa shabdastu mulo bhava. It's a tumulo bhavat. So actually Sanskrit, and as we know, English, the language has originated from the Greek and the Roman languages. And the Greek and Roman originally came from Sanskrit. You know, when the Kali Yuga started off, many of the kings from India went out, especially from the time of Parashuram, they started going out. And Kali Yuga started, the rule of the Indian monarch, emperor got loosened, so they got disconnected. So there are remarkable linguistic similarities between Sanskrit and Greek and Roman. So, tumulo is related with a tumultus. So, there are some indications we'll get throughout the Gita like this. Now, the focus shifts. The first time there is a focus on Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita. And it's a very beautiful entry of Krishna is there. Tataha shvetair hayair yukte mahati syandane sitau Madhava Pandava Shalvya Dindyav Shankav Pradatmatu.
On the other side, both Lord Krishna and Arjuna, shaken on the great chariot drawn by white horses, founded their transcendental fountain.
So, sometimes in a movie when the hero is to be enter, making his first entry, they'll show a car moving, and the brakes squeal. And then you show the legs coming out, and then you see the camera moving upward, and then you see the hero. So, like that, when he's describing Krishna, how is Tataha Shvetai Raya Hiryukte? Oh, beautiful white horses are there. And then behind the white horses, Mahati Syandane Sitau, a magnificent chariot is there. And then, who is there on the chariot? Madhava Pandava Shaiva. Then there is Krishna and there is Arjuna. But the striking contrast is that, the hero is not the warrior, he is the charioteer. The hero is there, so you have a hero, and you have that doesn't happen in the movie, you know, the hero is not a chauffeur of somebody else. But Krishna is like that. Actually the same entry is there even in the Bhagavatam. When Krishna enters in the Bhagavatam in the 7th chapter, son of Drona killed. And there also he is the charioteer of Arjuna. And this is the Bhaktavatsal mood. And it is described, of course, because both of them are the Lord and the devotee, their consciousness is said to be transcendental. So here, from the other side, the call of war comes out, so they also respond with the call of war. And now describe how the different Pandavas start responding with their particular consciousness.
Pancha Janyam Rishi Kesho Devadattam Dhananjaya Mohro Dadma Mahashankam Bhima Karma Vrikodara.
Lord Krishna gave his consul called Pancha Janyam. Arjuna gave him the Devadatta, the Bhima, the Orakis Uttar, the Swathama Vrikulianta, gave his terrific consul called Pondra.
So, Krishna and Arjuna described first time. Interesting, you see, Yudhishthir, although he is righteous, he is not the most powerful of all the warriors. And that's why while assessing them, Duryodhana does not even mention Yudhishthir. And even while the focus goes to the Pandavas, first it's Krishna and Arjuna, then it is Bhima, and after that Yudhishthir will come. Actually when Kunti is supposed to get sons, so Pandu gives his logic. He first asks, now my son is supposed to become my successor. So I want a son who will be very, very righteous. Therefore you go to Dharmaraj and get a son who is righteous. Then he gets the son and then he thinks, yes, righteousness is very important, but righteousness alone is not enough. Kshatriya should also have strength. Therefore please give me one more son who will be extremely strong. Then he gets Bhima. But then he starts thinking that, for a Kshatriya, just strength alone is also not enough. One has to have skill. One has to have expertise. So give me a son who will have tremendous skill. And then he gets Arjuna. And then of course, so he finishes his desires over there. But then Madhuri comes and says, what about me? You haven't given any sons to me. Then he gets two more sons. One who is a very expert horseman and second is one who is an expert speaker. So that way, he gets five sons with five different qualities. So as far as the battle is concerned, after Bhima and Arjuna mentioned, now after this, we will have Yudhishthir being mentioned. But now Bhima has a special adjective. What is that? Vrukodara. So Udara is belly. Vruka is very heavy or strong or powerful. So his belly will work over time. So we know that we have this Nirjala Ekadashi story, isn't it? That Bhima said, I can't fast. He went to Vyasadeva and he said, I can't fast. He said, no, you have to fast. Anikadashi said, no, I can't fast. He said, therefore, at least make some arrangement. I cannot fast every week. Every fortnight. So he says, once a year you fast. And you get the full credit for all of that. So Bhima, he had a huge appetite. At the same time, as Prabhupada very carefully qualifies, he was not only a huge eater, but he was also a huge worker, performer of Herculean task. So Prabhupada would say that. Sometimes devotees would overeat and Prabhupada eat so much. So Prabhupada says, if you eat too much, don't go to sleep after eating. You work hard and you digest all the food. But generally it's easy to do the first part, second part is not so easy. Actually, when the Pandavas were in the first Agnyatvas, first one was, after the Varnavas was burnt. So, actually Bhima would carry all the Pandavas. He would just run out and everybody else would get tired because he had so much, he'd eat so much. It was not that he was heavy and unwieldy, he was very strong and very powerful. Because of his weight, he had tremendous reserve energy. So everybody else would get exhausted, but still he had reserve energy. And he would carry the four Kaurava brothers, four Pandava brothers, as well as Kunti. And he would just run through the forest. So he was performing Herculean deeds. So, Nafra is described. Now he goes to the other.
Ananta Vijayam Raja Kunti Putro Yudhishthira Narvalasa Devascha Sughosha Mani Pushpato Kashyascha Parameshvasha Shikhandi cha Maharatha Drishtamuno Virataschya Satyavishya Parajitaha Drupadaropadeyascha Sarvayaputvipade Sovatrascha Mahabahu Sankhasatmu Prithakrita.
Yeah.
King Yudhishthira, the son of Kunti, bring his concept. The Ananta Vijaya and Nakul Sahadev drew his Sughosa and Manipushpa. The greatest archer, the king of Kashi, the great fighter, Shikhand, Dhrishtadyumna, Virata, the unconquerable Satyaki, Drupad, the sons of Draupadi and the others, O king, such as the mighty armed son of Subhadra, all drew their respective country.
So, Saubhadra is Abhimanyu. He is a very powerful warrior and his role will come up later as we know. Now he is describing all these warriors and now, so how it was, when the Kauravas blow their conch shells, the effect was that there was a huge amount of noise. But there is no effect on the Pandavas. When the Pandavas speak, blow their conch shells, it is not just a huge noise. That noise is described and the effect of that sound is described in the next verse. Saghosho dhartarashtrana hridayani vyadarayat nabhascha prithivim chaiva mulo avvinunadayan.
The blowing of these different consoles became appropriate, vibrating both in the sky and on the earth. It shattered the heart of the sons of the
sky. Yeah, shattered the heart. Hridayani vyadarayat. So they got a heart attack.
So, normally when we go for Mangalarti, you know, if you have not reached the temple hall when the conch shell blow, we get a heart attack. So those who are inside the temple hall are the Pandavas. They are happy when the conch shell blows. Those are not yet reached, they are the Kauravas. So now, so here,
more of the assessment of the forces had got over. Now let us see what happens after that. Atha vyavasthitan drishtva dhatarashtan kapitvaja pravrutte shastra sampate dhanurudyamya pandava rishikesham tadavakyam idamaha mahipate. Yes. So, the thing is, Kapi Dhvajaha. Dhvaja is flag, Kapi is monkey. So now, every warrior has his own flag. It's called the standard. So every warrior has his own standard and from far away, even if one is not able to see who is the warrior in the chariot, just by knowing the standard, one knows who it is. So, Arjuna had a monkey standard. And when Bhima and Hanuman met in Badrikashram, in the mountainous area, at the request of Bhima, Hanuman decided to manifest himself through the symbol of the monkey. So, was there actually Hanuman there or not? Yes, Hanuman decided to manifest himself. And actually when Duryodhana sees for the first time, he says, that standard, that monkey appears to be alive. How is it alive? It does not appear to be alive, it is actually alive. And especially when the war would start, Hanuman promises Bhima that by my roaring I will strike terror in the hearts of the Kauravas. So, you know, they see that there are so many warriors here, but this roaring sound, where is it coming from? Because there is no monkey on their side. And Hanuman is not like an ordinary monkey also. His roaring is thunderous. So although he does not actively participate in the war, but he is there to encourage the Pandavas and to demoralize the Kauravas. So he does that. So Kapi Dhvajaha. So because Hanuman was on the victorious side and the Lord was also there, at that time Lord Ram. So now it's an indication that he is going to be victorious. And he described that Dhanu Udyamya, he is holding his bow and the bow is raised for fighting. But at that time, Vishikesha, the word used for describing Krishna is Vishikesha, he is the controller of the senses. So both Baldev Vidyapakshana and Vishnu Chakra describe that when Krishna came to this world, you know, he exhibited his pastimes, and by beholding those pastimes, everybody would get liberated. But Krishna was thinking, what about those souls who are not present right now? How will they get liberated? For them, I should teach the path of Dharma. And to teach them the path of Dharma, I have to speak the message of Dharma. And therefore, by the will of Krishna, Arjuna goes into illusion. Therefore, Rishikesha is control of the senses. So Arjuna's senses get into delusion by the will of Krishna. Idam aha Mahipate. So here Mahipate refers to Dhritarashtra. Mahi is earth, Pate is the king. Okay, this is what he spoke. So what did he speak? Arjuna vacha senayor ubhayor madhye atham sthapayam me achyuta yavaneta dhirikshe ham yodhukamanavastitan
Arjun says, oh incredible one, please bar my chariot between the two armies so that I may see those chariots here, who desire to fight and with whom I must contend in this great trial of honor.
Hmm. So now, he is using the word achyuta. You never fail in delivering your devotee, in protecting your devotee. So now Arjuna also knows. So we can see Arjuna's situation from two perspectives. One is that actually he is going into illusion by Krishna's will. But still, even if it is by Krishna's will, there is a process by which the illusion happens. So Arjuna knows I'm making an extraordinary request because the conscience has been blown and the water should start. Now instead of sending arrows on the opposite side, what is the meaning of sending the chariot in between? Therefore, it's achyuta. He knows, says, yes, I'm going to ask you for something which is extraordinary, but I know you never failed to satisfy your devotees. You are infallible. Therefore, achyuta. Please follow. Do what I'm telling you. What does he say? Yeah, I want to go in the middle of Senaya Rubhar Madhis. Rasam sthapayam me achyuta. Now Krishna wonders, why do you want to place him there? You know, you are not... So he says, I want to see. Kair maya sahayodhavyam. I want to... Nirikshayam. So see, same time the word of Nirikshay. So see. And he says, Sayodhavyam. And the next verse will come, Pashya. See, I want to observe. So, Krishna says to Arjuna, now Vishnu Chakrakur by his realization, goes into the minds of Krishna and Arjuna. And he says, you know, Krishna tells Arjuna, Arjuna, you are not a spectator meant to see the two sides. You are a warrior meant to fight. What is this? He has asked you to go in between. He says, no, I want to see who it is fighting because I want to understand. Actually, the Pandavas never wanted the war. And he says, I want to see who are the people who have gone on this evil-minded Dhritarashtra side. So, like he discussed in the next verse.
Yotsamananavekshevam yete yatra samagataha dhartarashtrasya durbuddhe yuddhe priya chikirshavaha.
So, who can be so... We all know Dhritarashtra's son is evil, but who are the people who are there on his side, who are also evil like him? So I want to see that. You have some questions? Yeah, as soon as the conscience were blown, he immediately said, please take us in between. So what happened was that when suddenly the chariot started coming in between, Bhishma observed. Bhishma was surprised, even Dronacharya was surprised, Duryodhana was surprised, and they waited to see what is happening. Because in one sense, the war was something which none of the Pandavas did not want it, and the commander like Bhishma and Drona also didn't want it. Observing, is there some last minute chance of peace or something? What is the matter? So he waits. And then eventually he described that when they start having an earnest conversation, Arjuna will put aside his bow and surrender, and Bhishma raises his hand. Stop. So then, that's why for almost 1 hour or so, they stop. Because as long as Bhishma is the commander, generally, the codes of law, war codes are not broken. Almost everybody follows the war codes, even on the Kaurava side. But once Bhishma falls, then all sorts of immoral things start happening. The biggest immoral thing is the killing of Abhimanyu. And once that happens, even the Pandavas don't care then. Then they also, of course, whatever the Pandavas do is not immoral, it is transmoral. This is for the pleasure of Krishna. So it is transcendental morality. But still, from the material point of view, it may seem to be immoral, but till Bhishma is in command, Bhishma is very, very strict. He follows all the codes of morality. And that's why Bhishma says, stop. And that's why, although the war is about to start, everything is ready, but still the war doesn't start. So, good question. Now, Sanjay is speaking. So, now, because see how it is, the narration is twofold. Especially in the 11th chapter, you will see this. And Krishna is the Vishwarupa Darshan. So first Krishna tells Arjuna, this is what you will see. And then So the narration discussion in Krishna and Arjuna, Krishna does here, you will see this. And then the narration goes backwards. And Sanjay says to Dhritarashtra, this is what Arjuna is seeing. And the narration goes further inwards, and then Arjuna says, this is what I am seeing. So the Vishwarupa is described three times. The first by Krishna, second by Sanjaya, and third by Arjuna. So basically, whatever is done to help us get a clear understanding of the action, that is done. So now in one sense, it was, although it was throughout Sanjaya speaking, but now Arjuna was speaking. So the action had gone to between Arjuna and Krishna. Now it goes backward. Now Sanjaya tells, okay, what is going to happen? He told, moved ahead, so now what happens? So the narrator goes backwards. So Sanjaya is speaking now. So now who is, Mahabharata is a conversation between two people. Who is that? Does anyone know? The sage wife Vaishampayan is describing it to Janmejaya. Janmejaya is the son of Parikshit Maharaj, yes. Janmejaya is described. This whole thing is described by Vaishampayan. So they are having this conversation and it is described over here. So now what does Sanjaya speak?
Sanjaya Vacha Muktva Rushi Kesho Kula Keshe Bharata
So, Gudakesha in Bharata. So, Krishna is Rishikesha and Arjuna is called as Gudakesha. Now, Gudakesha has many meanings. The one meaning which Prabhupada refers to is that Guda is ignorance or darkness. So Arjuna has conquered sleep. All of us know that story. Now Arjuna, one night the candle blew off when he was taking food. Arjuna thought, I can still take food. He thought, oh, if I can take food, then why can't I fight? He started practicing even at night. So he had conquered sleep by his dedication, because he knew eventually I have to fight for the service of the Lord. So he had conquered sleep. Now Shiva Chakra goes, this is another meaning of Guda Kesha. He says, Guda refers to jaggery, good. And he says, good a kesha. So like we have the word keshava. So there, ka refers to Brahma. Isha refers to Shiva. And a, good a keshava. A refers to Vishnu. So he says, guda kesha means one who gives the good to Brahma, Vishnu and Mahesh. Guda kesha. So why he refers it this way? Because he says, the form of Krishna is so attractive. And Krishna's pastime is so enchanting that everybody gets enchanted. So what is the enchantment here? And we see the 10th canto. 10th canto actually, everybody is enchanted. There's the Brahma Vimohan Leela after which Brahmaji offers prayers. There's the Banasura incident after which Shivaji offers prayers. And we have the kidnapping of the Brahmana sons after which Mahavishnu offers prayers. So that is there in the Bhagavatam. So here he is describing that this particular incident is twofold. First, that Supreme Lord, who is the controller of everyone, first of all, he has become the charioteer of a devotee. That itself is amazing to see. And more amazing is that, now that person has become a charioteer, is now going to become the instructor. Normally, if you want some counseling or some philosophical discussion, you don't go to our school, driver, isn't it? We'll go to somebody senior. So that Krishna becomes the driver is amazing. And then the driver becomes a philosopher and gives instruction. So such an extraordinary pastime is about to happen. That's why this pastime, Krishna by his behavior, or Arjuna rather, by being such a wonderful devotee, that by his devotion the nectar of the Bhagavad Gita is going to manifest. And that nectar is going to be relished even by Brahma, Vishnu and Shiva. That's why Arjuna is referred to as Gudakesha. And then, so Sthapait Ratottamam, the best of the Rathas. It's called the best of the Rathas because it was given by Agni. You know, all of you know the story of Agni, isn't it? When they were in the Indraprastha area, Khandavaprastha, so Agni wanted to burn Agni's. So when Indra was not allowing it to be burned, that fire to be burned, so that forest to be burned. So when he allowed it to be burned, Agni said, I'll give you a chariot which will not get burned, which will move like fire everywhere and which will never be burned by fire. So that's how the word is used, Rathottamam. Now what happens after that? Krishna does something very special. You know, actually when the soul desires to go into illusion, Krishna arranges the exact illusion that will put the soul under illusion. So just like we say, Maya knows our weaknesses. So whenever, if we have particular weakness, and Maya will exactly send the attack in that weakness only. So now Arjuna is going to see the battle, see the opponents, but now the weakest or the most the weakest link in his heart, most affectionate people on the upper side are the Bhishma and Drona. So Krishna takes his chariot right in front of them. That's what happens.
Bhishma Drona Pramukta Sarvesham Chamahishitam Uvacha Partha Pashyantam Samavetan Kuruniti.
In the presence of Bhishma, Drona and all the other two kings of the world, the Lord said, just behold Partha, all the Kurus resemble him.
So, Pashya, see again. Just see, you want to see? Please see now. So now here, this is like the last verse. From this verse to the next verse, the transition will happen. So then Arjuna is doing Sainya Niriksha. And next verse also does Sainya Niriksha. And the for Dhritarashtra, for Duryodhana, when the Sainya Niriksha is done, it just activates his political intelligence. But the same Sainya Niriksha on Arjuna has some other effect. That will be transition. So we did not specifically go through these three sections, but it's more or less obvious. First we have the how both sides are prepared for war. And then it's described how, for the Pandavas, there are signs of victory. It starts from the description of how the conscience are transcendental, how the conscience causes the shattering of the heart, how there is Kapidvaja, how there is Athottama. And then Krishna as Bhaktavatsala is described. So this is all in Sainya Niriksha Yoga. Now what happens after that? Now let's see what is the effect on Arjuna.
Tatra pashyatitān pārthā pitrinatha pitāmahān ācāryā mātulān bhātrin putrān pautrām sakhīn tathā śvashurān surujashyaiva senayor bhayorapi.
So now it's very interesting, the Bhagavad Gita setting, it illustrates how that by pratyaksha, by over-reliance on pratyaksha praman, even a great soul like Arjuna can get the bewildered. So what is, so although Krishna is there next to him, but instead of asking for Krishna, he says, I want to see iksha. And just see the instant effect. Well, earlier, when before he actually went and saw, so before he goes in the middle of the battlefield, he's saying, I want to see those who are Dhartarashtra se durbuddhe, yuddhe priya chikirshava. Who are those who are assisting the evil-minded son of Dhritarashtra? But as soon as he goes inside and sees, he doesn't see them as evil-minded. He sees them as, oh, they are my grandfather, they are my brother-in-law, they are my sons, they are my grandsons, they are my brothers. So, the whole bodily conception starts overpowering him. So actually, the Bhagavad Gita setting illustrates, so the next three verses will illustrate the effect of pratyaksha. And then after that, Arjuna starts doing his Anuman. And the end result of protection and Anuman is vilap, lamentation. So that's what happens, you know, when we rely too much on protection and Anuman can be used, but if we rely too much on that, then we will become discouraged in our devotional service. Like if we rely too much on protection, we think, you know, this, how can we ever preach Krishna consciousness? So much opposition is there. You may think, if you rely too much on pratyaksha, the sense objects are so much and so tempting, how can I keep resisting? And then we'll start doing Anuman, you know, actually this is Kali Yuga only, you know. And Kali Yuga as it is, people are going to become materialistic. How can I alone fight against Maya? And, you know, we will start justifying. So what happens? Pratyaksha and Anuman mislead a person. So, now from here onward, the effect, Arjuna's vilap starts. Arjuna Vishada Yoga.
तान समीक्ष्य स कौन्तेय सर्वान् बन्धून अवस्थितान् कृपया परयाविष्टो विशीदन् इदम् अब्रवीत्.
Yes. So here it's more clearly made out. They are sarvan bandhun. All of them are relatives. They are all my bandhu. And what happens? Krupaya paraya vishto. So krupaya is compassion. Now paraya can refer to transcendental or it can refer to overpowering. That he's overpowered by the compassion or he's got transcendental compassion. Now is Arjuna's compassion transcendental? No, it is not transcendental because he's getting overpowered by the bodily compassion. So the point here is, he's overpowered by the compassion. Vishidan. He starts lamenting and he starts speaking. What does he speak? Arjuna vacha drishve mam svajanam krishna yurutsum samupasthitam
sridanti mam gatrani
mukham cha parishushyati.
Arjuna said, my dear Krishna, seeing my friends and relatives present before me in such a fighting spirit, I feel the limbs of my body quivering and my mouth drying up.
So now here, Arjuna started getting what in modern language we call an emotional breakdown. So what happens to him? He gets overwhelmed. His mamagatrani sidanti mukham cha parishushyati. My mouth is drying up. So let us see what happens further to him.
Vepatushcha sharire me roma harshascha jayate gandhi vamtram sate hasta yakrakyaiva parijayate.
My whole body is trembling. My hair is standing on end. My bow gandiva is slipping from my hand and my skin is burning.
Yes. So he's describing all these symptoms and Prabhupada explains that rushta roma, that hair standing on end. So this can happen because of ecstasy, it can happen about fear. In Arjuna's case it is because of fear of imminent destruction. This rushta roma will be described at the end, in the 11th chapter also. There it is about for wonder and this is the Vishwarupa. Now here, after describing the physical symptoms, now the physical effects, now he goes further to describe the emotional effect. Deeper, what is happening? Nacha shakno myavasthatum bhramati vachame manaha nimittani cha pashyami viparitani keshava.
I am now unable to stand here any longer. I am forgetting myself and my mind is reeling. I see only causes of misfortune, O Krishna, killer of Keshi demon.
So now here, the Prabhupada is a beautiful purport. Can I read the last individual purport?
Vajra said that his history in the letter would only be a cause of limitation for him.
Yeah. Sorry, it's the first sentence, not the last sentence. Without knowing that one's self-interest is in Vishnu, conditions were attracted by worldly possessions, hoping to be happy in such situations. The word nivittani vipritani are significant. When a man sees only frustration in his expectations, he thinks, why am I here? Why am I here? Everyone is interested in himself and his own welfare. No one is interested in the Supreme Self. So basically, Arjuna starts seeing his situation as a lose-lose situation. Modern terminology he had is win-win, lose-lose, win-lose, lose-win, whatever. So, he says, lose-lose. And he will explain how it is a lose-lose option. And basically what happens? When a person starts thinking, what should I do? Either this or that. And this also is going to cause me suffering, this also is going to cause me. What to do? Therefore, a person just gets completely frustrated. And when people get frustrated, what nowadays people do is commit suicide sometimes. So actually it all begins because one is seeing only from one's perspective. What is there in it for me? And if he looks from a selfish perspective, both ways he will see there is loss. And he'll describe what is the loss. Nacha shakno me avasthatum brahmativa cha me mana nimittani cha pashyami viparitani. And the word nimitta can refer to cause or nimitta can refer to instrument or signs. So nimitta, I can see actually inauspiciousness. For a kshatriya to feel his weapon slipping away is inauspicious. For him to feel his mouth drying up. A kshatriya to be fearful, like in the first canto, Srila Prabhupada says, when a warrior is going away, for the woman to cry is inauspicious at that time. So like that for Kshatriya, to see himself becoming weak is considered inauspicious. So he says, I am seeing all this viparita nimitta, this is not very good. So this viparita nimitta is the effects on himself, he is feeling alarmed by that. Viparita nimitta is also, if he is looking in the future, he thinks, oh, whatever I fight, I am not going to gain in any way. And how he feels he is not going to gain, he starts describing. So the Bhagavad Gita historically is one particular incident that happened 5,000 years ago. But the principle is eternal. And the principle is that at a material level of life, sooner or later, everybody becomes frustrated. Everybody becomes frustrated. Now, whatever we do, we find that this doesn't lead to any solution. Either I do this or do that. So then at that time, we have to the Bhagavad Gita actually raises Arjuna's consciousness to help him to see from a higher perspective. Let's see what sort of reasoning Arjuna uses. So, 31st?
अथ श्रेयोऽनुपश्यामि हत्वा स्वजनमावे न कांक्षे विजयं कृष्ण राज्यं सुखानि च.
I do not see how any good can come from killing my own kinsmen in this battle. Nor can I, my dear Krishna, desire any subsequent victory, kingdom or happiness.
So as we know, Arjuna has this five main reasons for not fighting, which I mentioned over there. Compassion is what he feels initially. And he feels, why should we just kill them? Why have so much bloodshed? Just let's avoid it. After all, they are my relatives. So actually, when Maya comes in for us, especially serious devotee, Maya doesn't come directly as sense gratification. Because the serious devotee will not fall by sense gratification. We know how Maya came to Bharata Maharaj was actually compassion. This baby is dying. This baby here is dying. Save him. For Mother Sita, Ravana, if he had come as a demon, proposing to her, he would never accept it. He came as a saint. So Arjuna is initially, the emotion is compassion. But from compassion, it starts going down. Once the mode catches, they keep dragging us downward on. First reason is, why should we fight? Why should we have so much bloodshed? But then he thinks, if we have the bloodshed, even if we have the bloodshed, how will I enjoy? So his next reason comes up now. How can I possibly enjoy? Yeah.
किम नो राजेन गोविंद किम भोगै जीवितेन वा येषाम् अर्थे कांक्षितं नो राज्यं भोगा सुखानि च नायुद्धे त्यक्त्वा धनानि च आजाय पितरा पुत्रा तथैव च पितामहा मातुला श्वशुरा पौत्रा श्याला सम्बन्धिनस्तथा एतान्नहन्तुमिच्छामि नतोऽपि मधुसूदन अपि त्रैलोक्यराज्यस्य हेयो किं नो महीकृते यत्यधाकराष्ट्रान्ना कामिति स्या जनादन.
ओ गोविन्द, of what avail to us are the kingdom, happiness, or even life itself, when all those for whom you may desire them are now arrayed on this battlefield? O Madhusudan, when teachers, fathers, sons, grandfathers, maternal uncles, fathers-in-law, grandsons, brothers-in-law, and other relatives are ready to give up their lives and property and are standing before me, why should I wish to kill them, even though they might otherwise kill me? O maintainer of all living entities, I am not prepared to fight with them even in exchange for the three worlds, let alone this earth. What pleasure will be derived from killing the sons of
Dhritarashtra? Yes. So here, like, what benefit will I get? So you see, if I kill them, all the people with whom I could possibly share my enjoyment. Now imagine somebody comes first in this class. You become a topper in the university. But he's told, we'll make you the topper in the university, but you're not allowed to tell anyone that you're the topper. So what is the use of being a topper? Because, the material things are enjoyable only when they bring us some social glory. Even when a boy gets, boy makes a girl, gets a girlfriend or something, it's one thing to enjoy with the girlfriend, but other thing is show everyone else, I have got a girlfriend. There is a parade around. So material enjoyment actually is not so much in the enjoyment. It is more in the appreciation or the envy that one causes through that. So otherwise, like there was one car advertisement I saw, purchase this car and enjoy the envy in your neighbor's eyes. So enjoy the envy in your neighbor's eyes. So actually, ultimately all enjoyment is based on relationships. Alone we cannot enjoy. So Arjuna is thinking that all those with whom I could enjoy, if they are all gone, how will I possibly enjoy? It is the Pitama, my grandfather. Bhishma was very happy when Arjuna would excel in his archery, and he will encourage him. So later on, it is described in the Mahabharata that when they are about to go for the last meeting with Bhishma, and Bhishma is going to give them instructions and eventually depart. So at that time, Arjuna tells Krishna, I don't know what face will I show to Bhishma. Bhishma, this was the same person at whom I shot arrows, but he was the person. When I would be a small child, I would come and sit on his lap and I would play with his beard And he says, "Father, father." And he would touch my hair and he says, "Child, I am not your father. I am your father's father." So, you know, for Arjuna, he is a virtuous person. So he's thinking, what can I enjoy if all the people whom I love, with whom I would like to share? Just like if we do some preaching. And after doing our preaching, you know, we would like to take those devotees and invite some senior devotees to the preaching. Or take the devotees whom we are preaching to some program where senior devotees can also give their guidance to them. Now that's one level where it's spiritual, but on the material level also, now all material enjoyment is based on relationships. So he's saying, I cannot enjoy. That's the second reason. Now he goes further and he gives a third reason after that. Next verse. Papamevashrayedasman hatvaitanatataina tasman narhavayam hantum rashtrant bandhavan svajanam hi kathamatva sukhinasyam madhava.
Therefore, it is not proper for us to kill the sons of Sarastra and our friends. For six remain, O Krishna, husband of Balarama Purusha. And how could we be happy by killing our own
kinsmen? Krishna sort of quotes the definition of Atataina from Vasishtha Smriti. He says, Agnidogaradashchaiva Shastra Panirdhanapaha Kshetradarapaharascha Sad Ete Yatataina. The arsonist, one who, now you can tell how the Kauravas are actually Atatainas. The arsonist is one who burns by setting fire, with Varna what they try to kill. One who poisons others, yeah, Duryodhan tried to poison Bhima. One who attacks with weapons, right now they are attacking, but before also once, Agyatvas, at the end, you know, although they were... They were not prepared for war, still they had attacked at that time. Then the thief. Through gambling they had taken away their weapons. So the stealer of property. Yeah, it's a gambling. Both thief and stealer of property are more the same thing. Thief means one who takes wealth, property especially if there is land. So in the gambling they took both of them. And the stealer of one's wife. So that Draupadi they tried to disrobe. So basically, in the Vedic culture, violence is not encouraged, but it is not discouraged also when it is necessary. So if somebody is a lawbreaker, somebody is aggressor, then violence against that person is desirable for two reasons. One is that violence becomes an immediate reaction, a karmic reaction, especially when it is administered by a king representing God. Then his karmic reaction gets over there only. And secondly, it becomes a good example for society to see. Yes. Lawbreakers are punished. Now in modern society they have the idea that we can't give life, so how can we take life? So we should not kill others. But not having capital punishment, what is the end result of that? The end result is that the prisoners have to be maintained. You know, so prisoners have to be maintained in the jail. And who is going to maintain the prisoners in the jail? So you know, say somebody's family member is killed by some prisoner and by some criminal, that criminal is in jail. And that same murdered person's family has to pay taxes to maintain the murderer afterwards. So ultimately the prisoners, where are they maintained by? Well, the taxes of common people. So it's just silly, it's such a silly application of the principle of compassion. That misdirected compassion, that somebody who has murdered a relative, the relatives have to pay taxes to eventually maintain that very murderer. So that's why Atataina, the aggressors are allowed to be killed. But here, an aggressor when they are killed, there is no sin involved in that. But Arjuna is saying that, yes, Atataina can be killed, but Atatainas, who are our own relatives, they cannot be killed. So actually, for Arjuna, essentially, there is a conflict between two dharmas. The Kula Dharma and Kshatriya Dharma. According to Kula Dharma, family values, one should always protect one's family members. And one should not attack or punish or ever kill one's family members. So Kula Dharma says, one should protect one's Kula. And Kshatriya Dharma says, that one should kill the aggressors. So for Arjuna, this is the conflict. Arjuna is not just a coward who is chickening out from a fight. No, he is thinking, now what should I do? So he's saying, yes, from the Kshatriya Dharma point of view, killing Atidaina is not going to give pap. But papam eva shredasma, still we will get pap. Why? Hatvaitan Atidaina, because these Atidaina are svajanam. They are our own people. So at this level, both sides of the argument are right. Kshatriya Dharma, he should kill. Kula Dharma, he should not kill. And what is Arjuna's answer? Arjuna doesn't sarva dharma an parityaj. You know, forget your Kshatriya Dharma, forget your Kula Dharma. Just do what I am supposed to do. So he'll teach him the paradharma. So as long as the paradharma is not known, the aparadharma is there. But the aparadharma can lead to conflict sometimes. So he says, because they are sabandhavan and sojana, how can I kill them? So if I kill them, I'll be overcome by sin. If I'm overcome by sin, how can I possibly be happy? And then Krishna says, yes, they are relatives, but they are greedy people. You know, they are completely contaminated by greed. And therefore you should kill them. So Arjuna refutes this by saying, yes, they will be contaminated by greed, but at least we are intelligent. You know, they will be contaminated, why should we act in the same contaminated way? So he tries to counter further. So when this argument is countered or objected to by Krishna by saying, yes, but they are greedy, he says, at least we should see the consequences. And then he comes to the
last part of destruction of family tradition. That's how it will start.
So, yadyapyete na pasyanti lobho pahata chetasa
ulakshaya krutam dosham mitra drohe cha patakam katam nagyayam asmavi papalasman nivartitum ulakshaya krutam dosham prapashyatri janadana.
O Janadana, although the man, their hearts overtaken by greed, see no fault in killing one's family or quarreling with friends. Why should we, who can see the crime in destroying a family, engage in the act of sin?
So we can see at least that what is going to happen? We are going to kill. Now there is a very interesting discussion, very similar to the setting in the Udyog Parva. The Udyog Parva is the parva which comes before the Bhishma Parva. There, several sages and other elderly persons try to come to persuade Duryodhana to avoid the war. And there also the conflict is between Kula Dharma and Kshatriya Dharma. So at that time Duryodhana says, actually Kshatriya Dharma is more important. You know, it is my the kingdom is entrusted to me and I have to take care of it. And if they want it, they have to fight. So now here Arjuna, so there are very similar parallels between the Mahabharata. But here, so there is no Krishna, so there Dhritarashtra and Duryodhana sticks to his Kshatriya Dharma. But here Krishna will not just let Arjuna stay with either Kula Dharma or Kshatriya Dharma. Krishna will elevate Arjuna's consciousness. But here he is saying that how can we fight? Because we will lose everything. And at least we can see the consequences. They can't see, we can see. And because we can see, so we should not act in this way. So what does he say after this? What is this? What is he saying? What prapasyadvi, we can see. What is that we can see? That he'll describe the next 3-4 verses. Kulakshaye pranashanti kuladharma sanatana dharme nashke kulam krishnam adharmo vibhavatyauta. If any points are unclear, please feel free to ask questions. We'll have time for question answer at the end also. But if in the flow some questions are there, you can feel free to ask. So now he is saying, kulakshaye pranashanti. So two things he is saying, when the kulakshaya, when we kill all these people, kshatriyas, the kula will be destroyed. And then what will happen? The kula dharma will get finished off. Now interestingly, Arjuna is using the word sanatanaha, eternal. Actually nothing in the material world is eternal. Nothing in the material world is eternal, but he is thinking, the eternal family tradition. Eternal family tradition. Actually the family is not eternal, the tradition is not eternal. But you think? Kula dharma sanatana. Just like sometimes parents say, you know, if you don't get married, if boys become brahmachari and you are our only son, how will our kula go on? And our kula has been going on for so long. So the idea is actually nothing is eternal in this world. But so the nature, Krishna will tell in the 16th chapter afterwards, that kamam ashritya duspuram manadana mohad grihitva asadgrahan pravartante shivipa grihitva asadgrahan. One of the characters of illusion is that one thinks that temporary to be the eternal, to be eternal. So the family tradition is not eternal, but Arjuna is thinking it to be eternal. Sanatanaha. And dharma nashti. When the dharma is destroyed, then adharma will rise. Now how will adharma rise? He describes in the next verse. Adharma bhivavat Krishna pradushyanti kulastriya vishu drishta shuvashneya jayate varana sankara. Varana Sankara. So actually, this shows the Arjuna's depth of thought even in the situation. Although he's overcome by emotions, he's not just become emotionally irrational. He's not just shouting. And sometimes if ordinary people become angry or they become this repressed, they start thinking completely irrational. Arjuna is still thinking in a far-sighted and relatively mature way. But what he is missing out is the essential point that we are not the body or the soul. At the level of the body, he is talking very reasonably. He is saying that if the kshatriyas are not protected, if the kshatriyas are not there, and the woman will get contaminated. And the woman get contaminated, and there will be varana sankara. So now this purport of Srila Prabhupada is sometimes, especially in the Western society, considered to be very volatile. Because Prabhupada says women are not less intelligent and should not be trusted. And of course, Prabhupada never treated his women disciples as less intelligent. But Prabhupada used the word less intelligent in the sense that actually, in general, women are more emotional than rational. When they are more emotional than rational, they get attached to material things very easily. And for them to realize that we are not the body or the soul is very difficult. So because it's so difficult for them to realize, so they need dharma to keep themselves engaged. Otherwise, they are very prone to be quickly degraded. And in the Western society we'll discuss about this more in the 16th chapter. But this whole concept of Varana Sankara is practically seen nowadays. You know, actually in America and Europe, more children are born outside marriage than inside marriage. More children are born outside marriage. So it's all, they do illicit connections and they have children. And the children, not only are the, like we have, which is the story in the Mahabharata, in the Bhagavatam which describes how improper contact leads to dangerous progeny. Ditya and Kashyapa uniting at an inappropriate time. Now actually both of them are not ordinary sanskritifiers. Kashyapa is a great sage. But even great personality uniting at an inappropriate time can lead to disastrous consequences. Now what to speak of two materialistic people uniting at an entirely arbitrary time. So we see, actually as compared to even 1950s, 1960s, the society that is there in America is far, far more degraded. Degraded in the sense that, so, you know, yesterday I gave a seminar to our Utkarsh boys. So we may say that there's technology, there's mobiles, and there are cell phones, there are laptops, and there is internet, fast cars, it's there. So from the technological point of view, there may be improvement. But from the social point of view, since 1960 to 2000, what has happened in America, according to American statistics themselves, what has happened, the divorce rate has increased 3 times. The violent crime rate has increased 4 times. The number of prisoners have increased 5 times. The number of children born outside marriage has increased 6 times. The amount of living together relationships has increased 7 times. And the amount of depression has increased more than 10 times. So where is the happiness? And if you see, in American society, they don't even consider drinking and smoking to be bad. So those statistics are far apart. So they are already there. But even statistics which even they can appreciate. The divorce rate has doubled. The criminal population, the violent crimes have tripled, the prisoners have increased 4 times. And this is all ultimately starting from improper regulation of the sexuality in society. When the sexual relationships are not regulated properly, then the whole degradation starts. So actually what happened, most of you know about Bill Clinton. You know, he had some sort of illicit contact. And then the opposite party, they started blaming, you know, he should resign. So he did not resign anyway. But within 3 years, subsequent to such a result, that out of the 6 people who were accusing, who were charging him to resign, all 6 of them themselves had illicit relationships. And they also had children. So actually, practically speaking, in Kali Yuga, what to speak of being a brahmachari? Even grihastha is difficult. Even being a regulated person in a household life is difficult. So it all begins because after the 1950s, when Srila Prabhupada was going to the West, at that time the whole concept of sexual relationships was changed completely. So basically what happened in the 1940s and 1950s, the tobacco market, they realized that we have reached a saturation now. Because till the First World War and after that, around 1910-1920, nobody knew about the harmful effects of tobacco. And they were suppressing it all. And after that, when the data came out, then they started appealing to the daredevilish trick among people. Come on. Yes, it can cause cancer, but no can enjoy. It will cause cancer to others, not to you. Enjoy. And many people fell to that. But then they realized that we have reached a saturation. So, and then something like 1990, around the Second World War time, just a little before that or something like that, they decided that there is only one way we can expand our market now. And that is by tapping women. 50% of the population we have not tapped till now. And how do you, now women would never smoke till then. Because smoking was considered to be a typically masculine thing to do. And then they made, at that time, the major American tobacco cigarette manufacturing company, they made a special thin cigarette. And then they said that this is a female cigarette. And on the American Independence Day March, they got some of the 15 of the most popular women in America. They are also there on the march. And at the most visible point in the march, they told them, when photographs were there, cameras, videos were there, they told them, flash out the cigarette and start smoking. And they all started smoking. And it became so much hype because it was Independence Day, thousands of people were watching live and so many cameras were there. And all of those women were paid when they were asked, why are you smoking like this? He says, smoking is so liberating. He says, that was the time when they wanted to appeal to the emotion of liberalization. Women are suppressed, women are oppressed, repressed. So this is liberating. And now, actually, from the around 1890s to 1900, the turn of the century, before that, all the advertisements were appealing to the rational intelligence of the person. This product is so efficient, this product is so good, this product is so cheap, therefore take it. But from the 19th century, towards the turn of the 20th century, and especially after the First World War, they realized that by appealing to intelligence of people, you can't persuade them to purchase much. You have to appeal to the emotions of the people. So all the advertisements you see today, there's no intelligence in the advertisement. Right? It's all emotions. So they appeal to the emotions, and because of all these leading women, they said, cigarette smoking is liberating. That irrational emotion took over, and women started smoking. It's liberating. And nobody asked how smoking is later liberalization of women. So this is a practical example of how the advertising can completely bewilder. And from that time onwards, women started throwing out what they felt were the repressive social factors. They started coming out in the public. And from that time, American society has just gone down terribly. And as American society is coming to India, the same thing is happening in India also now. So actually, it's not a question of blaming women or blaming men. But society is made in such a way, like the butterfire analogy is given. Now, why the butterfire analogy is given? It's not that, you know, fire, why do you burn the butter? Butter, why do you get melted by fire? That's not the point. The point is what? That the butter and the fire should be kept separate. So, the butter should be torn. You should keep very far away and the fire should be torn. You know, fire is very dangerous. So, depict both in such a way that they keep away from each other. So, somebody has to work in human society. So, the people who work will be men. That's how it traditionally has been. And that doesn't mean that women are repressed. They have other alternative roles to play. And, you know, they did a survey of 100 serial killers of America. Now, those people who have killed more than 25 persons. One person has killed more than 25 persons. And he's not like a gang member. He's just a, what they call it as a psychopath. A psychic killer. And all these 25 people, they found they did not come from a family which is a normal nuclear family with mother and father. They did not have, either the father and mother were not together. They did not get the love of the mother and the father, and especially the mother did not emotionally support the child. So they say we want to have the career, but then a whole generation gets ruined by that. So Prabhupada's statements, we have to understand the broader social context. It's not that, it may be true that sometimes women have been exploited, and that should not be happening. But the point is, everybody has their role in society. So, Prabhupada is the first acharya. If you look at Vaishnava Chakravarti Thakur or Baldev Vidya Bhushan, none of the previous acharyas gave social commentary. Now, Vaishnava Chakravarti Thakur was a time when the Mughals were breaking around in Vrindavan. But he does not write anything about Islam in his commentary. You know, because he is giving a spiritual perspective and he is writing to scholars. You know, other scholars of other acharyas. But Prabhupada is the first acharya who gives social commentary. Social commentary means he shows how spiritual issues matter. How scriptural verses can be related with our day-to-day situation. Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur and Bhaktivinoda Thakur also not do so much of that. But it was Prabhupada was speaking in a culture which was entirely different. So he had to tell about the social implications of the current values and the social implications of the Vedic values. So when we see the broader social context, then we can explain to people in a way that doesn't put off people. Sometimes people may just read this and why you say that women are less intelligent? What is this? Modern feminists don't even allow that. And the Christian religion, the feminists are so aggressive that the feminists, certain denominations of Christianity change the Bible only. Wherever God said, the pronoun for God should be he, they say he slash she said. Why should God be male? He slash she said. In New York, they have made a big statue of Jesus. And they say, if Jesus is the representative of God, why should he be male? So they have made Jesus with breasts and genitals, and female genitals. You know, it's so crazy. Imposing the male sexuality, the mundane sexuality on divine. And then some people said, how can you portray God as she? So then they found a solution. Typical Mayavadi solution. Use it. God said, it said. So actually, the modern society has completely gone haywire. And it all started because of irrational passions. So what Arjuna is describing, that what will happen is Varana Sankara. So we see Varana Sankara even in Kali Yuga. So much Varana Sankara, especially those who are born improperly, nurtured improperly, then they become chaos in society afterwards.
Sankaro narakayaiva kulagnanam kulasya cha patanti pitaro yaisham gupta pindo dakakriya.
Sankaro narakayaiva. So actually, when the dharma is destroyed, it is not only those who are destroyed they suffer, but those who destroy also suffer. Because dharma protects everyone. The dharma is destroyed, those who are supporting dharma are destroyed, those who are destroying dharma also destroyed. That's why I said kula gnanam kula svecha, both of them. And because the Mahabharata is primarily at the Karmakanda level. The Mahabharata primarily teaches Karmakanda, and the Vaishnava Acharyas can reveal to us how it is also showing bhakti. So in Karmakanda, doing Pindadan is considered vitally important. In fact, you will see in the Mahabharata, if a king does not have a son, you know, one of his concerns is who will rule the world, even maps, who will rule the kingdom maps. And the second concern is, who will do Pinda for me? So Arjuna is thinking that if there is nobody to do Pinda, then look, patanti pitaro yesha. The ancestors, they will not be able to maintain their destinations and they will fall out. So he's thinking very much in terms of dharma only. Arjuna is not just emotionally choked up in a mundane, modern sense. He's still thinking in a far-sighted way. But all these things, he's far-sighted, but not far-sighted enough. Doshai retai kula gnanam varana sankara karakai
उत्साद्यन्ते जाति धर्मा कुलधर्माश्च शाश्वता।
So, actually, when the dharma supports not only the spiritual growth, but even the material growth. You know, when Macaulay came to India, he writes in one of his letters, Macaulay is one of the Governor Generals of British India, he says, I have traveled over the length and breadth of India. This is just in the 19th century. So he says, I have not seen a single beggar anywhere in India. I have not seen a single beggar. Can we now imagine India without beggars? It's difficult, but just, so if dharma is there, dharma leads to even material welfare. That's what he's saying, that all the material welfare, social welfare schemes will be destroyed by that. Yeah. Utsanna kula dharmana shanam janatana narakeniyam vaso bhavati ityanu shushruma. Now here this is rhetorical unit. Narake nyatam vaso. Nobody stays for in Naraka forever. But here Arjuna wants to drive home the point. You have to suffer for so long. So never nyatam is like we say nityabaddha. Nityabaddha is not eternally bound. In the sense of forever. It means for a very, very long time. For a very long time somebody will have to stay in Naraka. And he's saying that it's not just my opinion, anushushuruma. This is what I have heard. So he has heard from the great sages and other spiritual authorities that somebody who destroys dharma, so how can I be the destroyer of dharma? So this fear of sinful reactions by which he will have to go to hell, he will destroy the traditions in this life and going to hell in the next life. So now he starts lamenting. He says, how can we act so shamefully? Aho batamahat papam kartum vyavasitavayam yadrajya sukhalobena hantum swajanamahave. So now, for the first time, Arjuna is using the plural to refer to himself. Vayam. Vayam. Earlier he has used occasionally, but he's saying that we means I and all my Pandava brothers, and especially I and you. How can we fight like this? So he's trying, he's giving his reasoning and he's trying to get Krishna also on his side. Yes, how can we fight? Alas, how are we about to fight impelled by greed like this? He's saying, no, we cannot fight like that. And then Krishna says, but if you don't fight, it's not that if you become compassionate, they will also become compassionate. They will not become compassionate, they are going to kill you. So actually, Prabhupada will quote here in the next chapter also, he says, non-violence for a Kshatriya may be just a matter of strategy, but it is not a matter of principle. Sometimes a Kshatriya may decide, in this situation it is not good to fight, so let's strike a deal. But non-violence is never a matter of principle. Mahatma Gandhi is revered as the apostle of non-violence. Now certainly his aspects of his being a celibate or his living a simple life, he is promoting a cottage-based industry and things like that is good. But non-violence as a matter of principle doesn't work. You know, Prabhupada said that actually India won independence not because of Gandhi, it was because of the Indian Army's rebellion, Subhash Chandra Bose. But there was a movie, sort of sarcastic movie made about Gandhi, which was banned in India. It was called 8 Minutes After. So what was the movie? That they basically showed that Nathuram Godse shot and killed Gandhi. And after he fell, that Gandhi had persuaded the whole country with his philosophy of non-violence that nobody decided to do anything. And Nathuram Godse just shot Gandhi and went away coolly. And everybody just stood there like that, doing nothing. So the idea was that there are certain situations when violence is absolutely essential. So
if somebody is killed,
Gandhi, obviously the nation will have to kill him. Of course, whether that was right or wrong, that's a whole different issue. We're not going to get into that. But the point is, Prabhupada also had to face this when he was in America. He said, how can God cause war? God should bring peace. and especially because the Vietnam War was going on at that time, and youth were being forced into that. So Prabhupada was so brilliant. You know, there was one goldsmith, he was a lawyer. He was the only respectable person coming for Prabhupada's program. Others were all hippies. So Prabhupada was giving a law class, and that time he said, Swamiji, but how can God cause, how can God impel war? So Prabhupada asked, what's wrong? You should have, no, God should bring about peace. So Prabhupada asked him, what is your definition of peace? Peace means no war. Isn't that obvious? You're looking at everyone else. This is a stupid question. So Prabhupada said, even if there is no war, there will be thousands of things that will disturb your peace. So he says, peace is not possible in this world at all. So what Krishna is telling us is not a mundane war or mundane peace. What Krishna talks about is the peace of the heart. The peace of the heart, when the heart comes in harmony with Krishna. The Bhagavad Gita is not talking about ordinary war, basically. There is one Hindu commentator who wrote on the Bhagavad Gita, alas, now we Indians, we Hindus have not followed the Bhagavad Gita. And that is why India is suffering. If Indians had followed the Bhagavad Gita, you know, as soon as Pakistan went bomb, we would attack and destroy Pakistan. And then we would have been true followers of Bhagavad Gita. Krishna told Arjuna to fight. So we should all have fought also. So actually, the Bhagavad Gita was always a respected book, but during the independence time it became a popular book. Why popular? Because, you know, all the independence leaders, because the Christians had their Bible, which is a handy book, small book relatively speaking, actually the New Testament, and Muslims had their Quran. The Hindus had no one book. You know, somebody refers to, somebody has their Shiva Puran, somebody has their Bhagavatam, somebody has their Upanishads. So they decided, we need one book which can unify everyone. And they decided to read the Bhagavad Gita. So it's interesting, practically all the political leaders, you know, like Gandhi, Tilak, all of them, Aurobindo, all of them, they wrote their political commentaries when they were in jail. You know, especially, you know, basically in jail you don't have anything to do. And they, especially Gandhi and Tilak, they pride themselves on the fact that, you know, we did not refer to any traditional commentaries while reading the Bhagavad Gita. We did not refer to anything. So, you know, there is reading from a book and there is reading into a book. Reading into a book means what? There is something in my mind and I find that inside the book. So, it's not, I'm not reading to see what the book will tell me. I'm reading to see what I can find inside the book. So, you know, some of those political leaders, now, it's not that nationalism is wrong. It's not that India should not fight Pakistan. If it's required, it can do that. But that war is not the essential message of the Bhagavad Gita. Bhagavad Gita says something far higher. So there were these political leaders. They said that actually, very interesting, you know, dharma has to be reestablished and dharma has to be destroyed. So actually the adharma is this British rule. And the avatar of Krishna that has come, you know what is that? That is the Indian National Congress. That the Congress is the avatar, and this Congress will uproot the dharma. And we are following the Bhagavad Gita. Now there are Indian national leaders who wrote commentaries like this. So no wonder Prabhupada was angry, you know. You know, Prabhupada will say, Bhagavad Gita as it is. It's, as I say that, I suppose, you know, sometimes if we have, say, some devotees giving a class, and the audience is mostly Hindi. So you have a speaker who is speaking in, say, English, and the translator is translating in Hindi. But suppose if you have a situation where nobody in the audience knows Hindi. So I do the translation, and translation is a very difficult service, in public especially. Because all those who know both the languages, they are all testing how accurately you translate. They hear this, because otherwise, you know, what is the engagement for them? They've already heard first. They already heard what the speaker has spoken. Now when it is being repeated, what is there to engage them? Then they assess whether it is correct or not. That's why it's very difficult. But the point is, imagine a situation where nobody in the audience knows English. And the speaker is speaking in English, and the translator is supposed to translate that and speak in Hindi. But suppose the translator starts giving his own lecture.
So the speaker is something, the translator is doing something else. And everybody thinks, oh, the translator is only going on. Now, if in that audience, one person is there. Hey, what are you doing? You are not speaking what he is speaking. You are not translating properly. Don't disturb, you know, be peaceful, be calm. It's a very peaceful atmosphere. Why are you disturbing it? This is not peaceful, this is nonsense. So what happens is, Prabhupada is like that. You know, many people say, why does Prabhupada criticize so many people? But, you know, see, Krishna is speaking the Bhagavad Gita, and all these commentators, what they are doing is, they are speaking something else only. She has got very little to the Bhagavad Gita. And most people don't know what is Bhagavad Gita. So they say, whatever you say, that is Bhagavad Gita. So Prabhupada is one acharya who knows actually what is Bhagavad Gita. I say, this is not Bhagavad Gita. Now everybody has a right to propagate their philosophy. And that we agree. You know, even in the Vedic times also there were atheists, there were materialists, there were Charvak Muni. But Charvak Muni never wrote a commentary on Bhagavad Gita. So the point is Prabhupada would say that, okay, you want to spread your own philosophy, spread that philosophy, but don't claim that this philosophy is based on Bhagavad Gita. So that is the essential problem, because people don't know. Common people are completely ignorant about the Bhagavad Gita. Therefore, anybody who speaks anything on the Bhagavad Gita, people accept that. They think, oh, Bhagavad Gita is speaking, then it must be true. So even Nehru, in his autobiography, writes that actually I can never understand why people bow in front of stone and wood. And I have never found the idea of God as having any practical utility. But in a religious country like India, knowing a few Sanskrit verses and being able to quote from the Sanskrit books is very useful. That's why I do this. So you are so explicitly atheistic. But most other commentators are not like, most other Indian leaders are not like that. They were very implicit. They had no faith in Krishna, but they would take the name of Krishna and try to get credibility for themselves. That was the problem. So now Arjuna is saying that actually speaking, if we don't... So yeah, Krishna tells him that if you don't fight, then what will you do? You will lose. You will be killed ruthlessly. So Arjuna is saying, dying is better. Yadi mama pratikaram ashastram shastrapanaya dhartarashtrarane hanyun tanmekshe mataram bhave. Unarmed and unresisting. Two things. No weapons and not even a fighting spirit. I'll not fight at all. Let me be killed. And why is he saying ashastra? Because in the next verse, he will put down his shastra. He will put down his Gandiva. Sanjay vacha evam uktvarjuna sankhe atopastha upavisha visrujya sasaram chapam shokasam vigramanasa. So, visrujya sa sharam chapam. So, shara and chapa is the bow and arrow. He puts them aside. So, actually, Arjuna's bow represents the determination of the soul to serve Krishna. So, what happens by over-reliance on protection Anuman? Well, there is no reason to serve Krishna. Why should I serve Krishna? You become disheartened. And he puts aside the bow. And we will see, the imagery is also very significant. The last verse of the Bhagavad Gita is what? Yatra Yogeshwara Krishna Yatra Partho Dhanurdharaha. So he has again picked up the bow. So actually, at the start of the Bhagavad Gita, Arjuna puts aside his bow. I cannot fight. But at the end of the Bhagavad Gita, he picks up his bow and is ready to fight. So like that, for us also it happens that by Pratyaksha and Anuman, we lose our determination. I cannot serve. I cannot go on like this. But then when we hear Shabda, when we hear the philosophy of Krishna consciousness, that rejuvenates our determination. And then we also become determined to fight. So when the first initiation ceremony took place, Prabhupada told the devotees that from now on, whatever happens, you should never lament. Because Krishna has taken the reins of your life's chariot. Now that you have taken the shelter of a spiritual master, it's like all of our body is like a chariot. Normally, we say that the chariot is the intelligence. But when we surrender to a spiritual master, the spiritual master's words become our intelligence. That means Krishna becomes our intelligence. So
So Prabhupada told that, Krishna, you have handed the reins of your chariot to Krishna. And therefore there's no reason for you to lament. Krishna will take care of everything. So actually Krishna was at the chariot of Arjuna, but Arjuna is rejected. Now we will see from the next chapter onwards. So how Arjuna one by one, all these arguments are refuted by Krishna. So the first three arguments will be refuted in the next chapter itself. The last argument will be refuted in the third chapter. And the final argument, the fifth reason for not fighting, will be indecision, which will come in the sixth verse of the next chapter. That will be refuted at the end of the Bhagavad Gita. In the sixth verse, Krishna will be saying that, Arjuna will say, I don't know what to do. Nachaitad vidma katranno varyo. What is better, I don't know. Then in 18.73, and Arjuna replies, Karishye vachanam tam, I'll do what you say. So there, in this way, Krishna will systematically answer specifically Arjuna's questions, and Krishna will do one thing more. Because Arjuna is confused about Kula Dharma and Kshatriya Dharma. So, all the different kinds of dharma that are there in the Vedic culture, Krishna will briefly explain them, hierarchize them, and show how bhakti is the highest. So, because Arjuna has to choose a particular path. So that's why Bhagavad Gita is the most practical book. You know, the kind of dramatic setting that the Bhagavad Gita has, no other book has. Quran was not spoken on the battlefield, Bible was not spoken on the battlefield, or the Bodhisattva, or whatever other. No other scripture is so deeply philosophical, at the same time so eminently practical. So it is deep philosophy about the practical course of action. So how Arjuna's different question will be answered, we'll discuss in tomorrow's class. Thank you very much. Shri Krishna Bhagavan ki, Shri Mad Bhagavad Gita ki, Shri Prabhupada ki, Gaur Bhaktivand ki, Gaur Preman. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna Chaitanya Charan Prabhu ki,
Shri Prabhupada ki, Jai. Tomorrow we'll try to complete till 30th verse. Because there one section ends about the Atma. And the Karmakan section will start after that. So if you feel this space was a little far,
you can let me know. Only this, because there is more of pastimes and then another one, not so much. It will be faster. So tomorrow onwards, we can have more questions also if you have any, by the start of the morning.